Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Dr. Ratna Selvaratnam in this episode. Ratna is Manager of Learning Technologies and Innovation at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia and a design champion in the University of the Future project as part of a long career in e-learning. This podcast is sponsored by the International Council for Open and Distance Education, ICDE, the leading global membership organization working towards bringing inclusive, quality education to all. By joining the ICDE global network of flexible and distance learning, you can help transform the world through inclusive education. Become a member or find out more by visiting www.icde.org. I'm pleased to be talking with Dr. Ratna Selvaratnam, Manager of Learning Technologies and Innovation at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia. Ratna is a design champion in the university's University of the Future project. She has some recent forward-facing publications in the areas of micro-credentials and is on the ACODE executive, that is the Australasian Council for Open and Distance Education. Ratna, it's a real pleasure to be talking with you.
Likewise, Mark. Nice to meet you.
Can we kick off with a brief overview of your career and publications?
I am in an academic role currently in Edith Cowan University, but what I do is I lead a team to implement and support staff adoption of learning technologies across the whole institution. I also co-developed our university's proposed data ethics policy, so very pertinent in today's world because AI is nothing without data, is it? And one of my key focus in learning technologies is accessibility. So we've been ramping up our work in that space. And Edith Cowan University has a strong emphasis on access and equity, which I'm very proud of. In terms of my extracurricular work, if you want to call it, as you mentioned, I am the treasurer for the Australasian Council for Open and Digital Education, or ACODE, a leader in Australasia around technology-enhanced learning. I've been on the board for the previous 2 years and now treasurer. And we do co-author and produce leading white papers in the sector. And one of it that I wrote together with some colleagues is on the governance of artificial intelligence and data in Australasian higher education, a snapshot of policy and practice where people are. So that was in 2023. And in Q3 this year, we will be doing a second snapshot to see where the sector has progressed in Australasia. And it has a strong focus on governance and also ethics. And as you mentioned, my work around micro-credentials also came out of several ACODE white papers on the topic. And that led to some publications, including Open Praxis with ICDE.
Right, yeah.
So I'm quite pleased where that work with ACODE has taken ACODE as a whole, and also myself and another colleague, the president, being invited to be part of Australia's first micro-credential framework working party. So that was an amazing piece of work that came out in 2021.
Excellent. That was with Michael Sankey, wasn't it?
Yes, that's it, yeah. Michael Sankey. I also went through what I call a post-institutional phase of life, where I stepped out of academia and really wanted to contribute in the civil society sector. Yeah. So I come from Malaysia originally, and there we had the Malaysian Environment NGOs that was funded by the Danish Air Development Agency, DANIDA, and the work with them brought about a publication that I'm very, very proud of, It's called Biodiversity and Social Justice, Practices for an Ecology of Peace. There were several publications coming out of this work. I was a gender consultant on the project, along with the academic credentials. It really provided significant outreach into the communities we were trying to influence and also influence back into the organization. So all this reflects portfolio of passions, you might say, but that is actually, as we will talk about later, an interwoven theme around the work that I do and I hope to do.
Excellent. Look, firstly, my apologies. I thought the ODE and ACODE stood for open and distance education, but it's actually open and digital education.
Well, Mark, you're not wrong, and maybe one of the first internationally to find out that we just went through a name change.
Okay.
Right. So that's been approved because you have to go through the whole legality of it, and that's why it's open and digital education.
Great. Okay. Look, thanks so much for that overview. Now, you also have the University of the Future project as part of your mandate. I'm just wondering if you can tell us a bit about that. What is that seeking to do, and what is your role within it?
So Edith Cowan University is opening up a city campus, and in Perth, there isn't really any university with a city full campus present. So we will be the first. We are looking at going live at the end of 2025 with the first intake of students in semester one, 2026. There's been a long tail of work that's been happening with this. Today, I went to look at some tables for the active learning spaces and TEAL spaces. But really, there's a whole big group of us doing a lot of good work around thinking what the student experience might be like in this new space. But along with it, it's not just a physical space. It's also how teaching will change, how curriculum will respond to that sort of future-focused move that will happen. And also with all the disruptions that we've had with the pandemic, artificial intelligence, and anything else you can name it, right? The state of the world, basically. So I'm one of a few design champions. We have different roles in the project, and also our colleagues in the team will also have a city campus presence. So to be part of this big, exciting journey, which has already been 2 years of consultations and meetings and meeting with architects and now looking at prototypes, it's really exciting.
Brilliant. So what role are online tools playing in that? Because it sounds quite exciting to have an opportunity to develop something brand new in the middle of a city, a new university campus with hopefully all of the latest advances in pedagogy as well. How is online learning actually influencing that?
That's a really great question, Mark. After the pandemic, we've been really thinking about what that student experience needs to look like. And we are making a very intentional move towards an on-campus experience, but strongly supported by asynchronous and also synchronous software mediums to allow collaboration, wider outreach, and also syncing up our different campuses together, because we've got campuses not just in Perth. We also have a campus in Sri Lanka and also the Southwest in Bunbury. So to have that sort of experience also feed back into the other campuses is really important. So the hardware in there will allow us to have a lot of in-campus active learning. That there's a wonderful team looking after that and how that will look like. But the software also is, as you know, the biggest component, because that will allow the collaboration both in class and outside of the classroom, and bringing in and casting out that sort of knowledge in a synchronous and asynchronous way. And interestingly, our flagship, if I may say flagship, one of our biggest schools that's moving there is the WA Academy of Performing Arts, along with the School of Business and Law and Cybersecurity. WAPA being there is really anticipated to turn the CBD around, because we the executive dean has promised about 300 performances in a year. So that's going to be a lot of movement, a lot of activation in the city. Mm. And for that to happen, obviously it's going to be in person, but things like sharing practice with other conservatoires around the world and inviting them to share within the New City Campus space, making sure the performances are casted out in a really robust manner, because for performing arts, you need to make sure that your software and hardware is really meeting the needs, and also making sure that the broadcasting of these events also activates the city. So it's meant to be a very permeable campus, and that allows a lot of flow from the public as well into the space, and being able to participate in the space without always being physically there. I could go on and on, but I might pause here.
Sounds like a wonderfully interesting project you're involved with. Can we move on then to the ideas and themes that your work has provided, particularly those that you sense are pertinent today?
Yeah, and you know, we often quote Steve Jobs and that great Stanford speech that he gave. And it really stuck to me as well. You know, when you look back and you connect the dots, when I started off in academia, it was very much a liberal arts background because I had just graduated from a university in the US down South Mississippi, very different side of America. But wonderful, wonderful learning experience. And I brought that ethos back to Malaysia and that whole liberal arts approach. And that teaching and then eventually management evolved into technology-enhanced learning, because at that time, e-learning and m-learning, mobile learning, was just taking off, and it was just brilliant in a developing country like Malaysia. So much to contribute to that space. Also, looking at the themes that arose from my involvement in private higher educational institutions to Australian higher education when we moved here a few years back. Looking, connecting the dots in my very deep interest and commitment to values-based education, to the NGO work that I was referring to just now, funded by Danida. So the themes that really come out are values-based education intersecting with ecology. And ecology can mean many things, not just the environment, right? The human ecology, interacting externally with our environment, with our frameworks of thinking that need to be continuously adapting to all the changes that are happening. It's not that changes were not happening before. It's just that we are acutely aware and made aware of these changes. So those are the themes that I like to really, really explore. And I think in today's big, big world, there is a lot of power in the small. So we talk about large language models, for example, but what about small language models? What about that personal experience? What about, for example, AI-powered microcrits that are ethically robust? Because in the small, we can shape big things. So, and that's where the values that you bring into it really can shape larger impact.
So you've published on that too, haven't you? I think some of your earlier work looks at that that aspect of education. So I take it then you're taking those values in that work and applying it to what you're trying to achieve in the university of the future. But I'm also interested too as to how that actually builds into your interest in micro-credentials. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, the latest publication that came out of my work in that space is with three other colleagues in Australia from very diverse institutions in different states. And where we landed with that is a maturity model for micro-credentials, because micro-creds are a space where it's spruced up and then it's quiet again. And then you wonder what the government's doing to support you. And then there's this whole new announcement in, if I may say so, the Australian Accord, which is the review of education, higher ed, and the spaces that are linked to it. And micro-credentials are back on the table again. But we've not really progressed it in a very concerted way, I think. So the maturity model that my colleagues and I developed for this, I think really gets people thinking again, and not to lose hope, because it's a maturity spectrum, right? You start somewhere, but at least you have a point of measurement to see where next, and after that, where, and then you can plan that journey out. And that's where I think the power of microcreds are, in the sense that you are able to take bite-sized portions and not be so bogged down with the whole awards, the full awards process. You're able to innovate faster. Edith Cowan University has very strong values-based approach to what we do. We have our values pinned up everywhere, including the new value of courage. So if we take the courage to do these little things that become big things, I think that's where the real work is.
Excellent. Right now, we're coming up now to, we're probably quite close to the middle of 2024. It's quite amazing how quickly this year has gone. I'm interested in your observations about online learning and education at the present time. So we're now post-COVID. I'd imagine many universities are now getting back to some form of business as usual. What does that look like from your perspective in the online space?
Yeah, I think flexibility has become what students expect and also what staff expect in terms of how we work, but also in terms of how students want to learn. At our university, our average student, as we've discovered, is the older female student with young children holding on a full-time job and trying to get education going, right? So how do you cater for this non-traditional student who increasingly now values flexibility more than before, because it allows different pathways for education and for learning? So we have to provide for that flexibility. While we prioritize an on-campus experience, we are also looking at how we might provide that, like I mentioned earlier, through technology-enhanced methods where there can be that sort of asynchronous support for them, also using other methods like not just online learning in terms of video and audio, but providing feedback in a meaningful way using online tools, providing alternative submission options that work better online, not just trying to pigeonhole what's been done in the classroom in an online way. We are constantly exploring new tools that would allow this, whether they are AI-infused or just a better roadmap for our existing technology ecosystem.
I'm going to push a little bit and also ask you a bit about the AI side of things. But first, the push. You mentioned flexibility. From a student's perspective, what does that really mean in terms of what's on offer from Edith Cowan? Is it the sort of flexibility to start any course at any time? Is it the ability to study during a time of the week that suits you? What levels of flexibility are built in?
So I would say that the flexibility is being built in. Because this will require massive rethinking. So the university is going through curriculum transformation. We've kicked off the under the DVC education, a pilot project on that. Then there's also a huge amount of work that has been identified that will start soon, maybe in about a year or two, as the curriculum is being transformed. To rethink what the academic calendar looks like. We already have many periods of learning, as a lot of universities do. For example, our Sri Lanka campus runs on a trimester model. So we are also looking at how different academic calendar modes might work, learning modes as well. So there was a huge project to look at what this could look like, online, in-person, work-integrated learning, all these different modes. Because at the end of the day, you've also got to be able to report back to the government, isn't it? All this work is either in train or has been pegged to start.
Excellent. And I'm interested in probing you too on the AI side of things. So you've mentioned that you've done some work in that space. It sounds as though there's some quite exciting things happening there at Edith Cowan. Are you able to share some of the AI initiatives you have underway?
Yeah, so we've got project teams set up, especially in part of the as part of the curriculum transformation project. And also when it came out, playing around with what these tools can do and also simply familiarizing with them. So it's the familiarization with free tools, but privacy and security is a big thing for us, as it is with a lot of organizations. So we make sure we do it in a very guardrail safe environment. We are looking at Microsoft-enabled tools. We don't want to go necessarily big business, but because if you're in the ecosystem, you might as well see what's possible with that. Creating GPTs, playing with graphic visualization tools. Now, that's pretty interesting. Some colleagues in the team have been really looking at these and what that might mean for certain disciplines. So yes, I would say, I think JISC has come up with a maturity model for AI tools as well. I think we are at the exploration stage, as will be a lot of institutions.
Absolutely. It's an interesting space to explore. Can we move on to the research you'd most like to see? You open up a journal and find the perfect article that interests you. Absolutely. What's it about?
I was thinking about this one, and really for me, it's well-being in education. Again, connecting the dots, right? What do all these values that matter to us mean in translation? What is the outcome? What are all this technology-enhanced learning or the artificial intelligence tools out there? What to what end? At the end of the day, it's around well-being. And education is a great lever for that. So the need for coherent frameworks, for example, learning technologies or artificial intelligence, to foster accessible and inclusive learning environments while focusing on well-being. Now, that's a paper I would like to write and read.
Have you seen that done well? I don't know. Is there some good practice you've seen that you think should be shared across all online providers?
I really like the work that's emerging around the proponents of human-centered artificial intelligence, or what you might call HAI. I think Yang, in a 2021 paper, wrote quite well about that. It's really a human-centered approach to the governance of AI across diverse geopolitical contexts for higher education. We need to bring that as a focus. You're never going to outrun the technology, and neither do we need to, because we created it, right? But when we say Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and now we can all go to the top and start philosophizing, that's not necessarily what's going to happen. But how can we get close to it? How can we make being human meaningful, intentional, and conscious?
Excellent. Well, Ratna, to conclude, two people you'd recommend as leaders or legends of online learning, one whose work or perspective is significantly influencing you now, and someone else who you think might otherwise have a good perspective to share.
I like the work of Professor Apta Kaur. She's the UNESCO Chair in Innovative Digital Learning at Asia Pacific University of Technology and Innovation in Malaysia. She's also, Mark, the founder or one of the co-founders of the National E-Learning Center in Saudi Arabia, where we were both. And her work really drives home that whole human-centeredness of the technologies that we work with, because it's got to make an impact, not just in our immediate communities, but far-reaching communities, communities that are especially underserved. This is where the power is. It's not just making the good better, but it's making those who do not have access, have access meaningfully to the sort of education we really can envision for a larger swath of people. The other colleague I'd like to recommend is Dr. Albert Chow. He's the Vice President of Teaching and Learning at Hong Kong Baptist University. I had the privilege of being on a panel with him at EduTech Asia in November last year. And we were looking at data insights and how that supports the student experience and progression in higher education. And I really, again, appreciate the very intentional focus he's guiding the university in terms of the teaching and learning environment and data use in really putting the student in the center. We hear a lot about student-centered approaches, but from what he's been sharing, it's really, really a conscious design that I think all of us can learn from. And the most powerful part of it is not being afraid to make mistakes. In the field that you and I are in, we will make mistakes all the time. And we have to, otherwise we are never going to be able to push things further or try new things. And both of these professors have really influenced me in that sense.
Excellent. Thank you, Ratna. Well, thank you for a fascinating conversation. I look forward to seeing you in three dimensions at the ICD Leadership Summit in Geneva in June. So I look forward to meeting you there. Thank you for being a leader and legend of online learning.
Thank you, Mark.
You can learn more about Ratna and her work from our website. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.